Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? The show starts in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
I need a tax preparer. How should I choose one?
Using a paid tax preparer this year? Before paying someone to do your taxes, make sure they're qualified. Ask about their fees, experience, and training. Check with a Better Business Bureau. Avoid anyone who promises a higher refund. And review your tax return before you sign it. And make sure your preparer signs it too. For more tips, visit irs.gov and search Choosing a Preparer.
Every year, thousands of teens age out of foster care and face life on their own without the love and support of a family. For over 25 years, the Orphan Foundation of America has provided a safety net of support for these vulnerable young people. With OFA's help, these youth graduate from college and grade school, progress to exciting professional careers, and make the leap from foster care to success. Find out how you can support America's foster youth. Log on to orphan.org. That's orphan.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with substance use, don't wait to get help. Call the Addiction Resource Center's free alcohol and drug helpline. Our counselors provide confidential support and connections to local resources 24/7, 365 days a year. We're a nonprofit organization started by families who have been where you are, and we're not affiliated with any treatment centers or providers. Call us at 1-833-301-HELP. That's 1-833-301-HELP. Or visit us at addictionresourcecenter.org. Addiction is treatable and recovery is possible. We're here for you every minute of every day. Again, that's 1-833-301-HELP or addictionresourcecenter.org. Reach out today. A message from Addiction Policy Forum.
You hear that? That's the sound of healthy, safe water from the tap. And that safe water is available nearly everywhere in America, thanks in large part to the Safe Drinking Water Act, which turns 40 this year. Happy birthday, Safe Drinking Water Act. Together, let's keep our water safe for the next 40 years and beyond. To learn about how to protect your water, visit drinktap.org. This message brought to you by the American Water Works Association and United Water.
Pets bring so much joy to our lives. They're loyal, they're protective, and smart. Yet as smart as our pets might be, they can't advocate for themselves, especially in the event of a natural disaster. Hi, I'm Sean Lowe. Last year during Hurricane Harvey, I saw the impact of natural disaster firsthand. Many families suffered the added heartbreak of being separated from their pets. That's why it's important your pet is part of your family's disaster preparedness plan. Like storing pet food, medical records, and supplies in waterproof containers. Proper identification, a microchip, and a photo of you with your pet can help in case you get separated. And keep their favorite comfort toy handy. If you take steps now, you'll encounter less stress during the chaos of an emergency. To learn how you can prepare your pet for a natural disaster, talk to your veterinarian and visit banfieldfoundation.org/disaster. That's banfieldfoundation.org/disaster. Don't save it for a rainy day.
Thank you.
Need a tax preparer. How should I choose one?
Using a paid tax preparer this year? Before paying someone to do your taxes, make sure they're qualified. Ask about their fees, experience, and training. Check with the Better Business Bureau. Avoid anyone who promises a higher refund. And review your tax return before you sign it. And make sure your preparer signs it too. For more tips, visit irs.gov and search Choosing a Preparer.
I will return your call. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Your call. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
a message after the tone. I will return your call. Thank you.
Crossing line, all these back-to-back episodes tomorrow at 10. That is fun.
Facing weak tastes strength. So here's to the strong. We trust in our performance and comfortable, long-lasting protection. Because your strength is supported by ours. Depend. The only thing stronger than us is you.
All about
at Stitch Fix, we do this so you can do this.
Pets bring so much joy to our lives. They're loyal, they're protective, and smart. Yet as smart as our pets might be, they can't advocate for themselves, especially in the event of a natural disaster. Hi, I'm Sean Lowe. Last year during Hurricane Harvey, I saw the impact of natural disaster firsthand. Many families suffered the added heartbreak of being separated from their pets. That's why it's important your pet is part of your family's disaster preparedness plan. Like storing pet food, medical records and supplies in waterproof containers. Proper identification, a microchip, and a photo of you with your pet can help in case you get separated. And keep their favorite comfort toy handy. If you take steps now, you'll encounter less stress during the chaos of an emergency. To learn how you can prepare your pet for a natural disaster, talk to your veterinarian and visit banfieldfoundation.org/disaster. That's banfieldfoundation.org/disaster. Don't save it for a rainy day.
And we may find a tenant through the end of it.
Couldn't
you activate this? When he changed it into the battery, as long as we had more than 5 minutes of my vet would give us another 24 hours to get the paper back to turn.
Pets bring so much joy to our lives. They're loyal, they're protective, and smart. Yet as smart as our pets might be, they can't advocate for themselves, especially in the event of a natural disaster. Hi, I'm Sean Lowe. Last year during Hurricane Harvey, I saw the impact of natural disaster firsthand. Many families suffered the added heartbreak of being separated from their pets. That's why it's important your pet is part of your family's disaster preparedness plan. Like storing pet food, medical records and supplies in waterproof containers. Proper identification, a microchip, and a photo of you with your pet can help in case you get separated. And keep their favorite comfort toy handy. If you take steps now, you'll encounter less stress during the chaos of an emergency. To learn how you can prepare your pet for a natural disaster, talk to your veterinarian and visit banfieldfoundation.org/disaster. That's banfieldfoundation.org/disaster. Don't save it for a rainy day.
Fire forms and replacing statues out in Anglican churches still in Rome. Each statue held a clue pointing to the next. At the end of the path was the church of ordination for one of them. What makes you think the sons of the cardinals in the churches? The Illuminati called those four churches by the special name Malpati de la Scienza.
Sacrificed
the
many
offices
of science.
Exactly.
Hello?
Hello? I can hear you, Cousin Wendy.
I can barely hear you, just real low.
I'm real low to you, and I'm definitely low to the listener. But your voice is good.
Oh, well, I'm glad to know that, but I can just barely hear you. I want to contribute.
Well, your voice is good. So why don't you discuss the hot topic? Because your voice is good. The listeners can hear you. So
where would you like
you,
to be?
Because I gave the floor to you. You didn't hear me. But I said that when you come on air, that is all the floor is yours. Wow, you're in Dallas, wherever you would like to go with the hot topic. So we're in a storm. I don't know how the weather is in Dallas today, but we are dealing with spring-like weather and a tornado threat in the morning.
Today felt like tornado weather. Today felt like tornado weather to me. I checked my phone, the temperature on my phone before I went outside, and it showed 77 degrees. Prior to that, we had some interruptions on television. The National Weather Service was predicting heavy rain in certain areas in Denton County, Collin County, and I'm in Denton County, but I'm way south, about as far south in Denton County as you can get. So I figured that it wouldn't hit me. And it was just hot and muggy. It's overcast looking. So I'm hoping the Dallas Metroplex isn't hit with any more bad weather. We need a reprieve right now.
Yes, yes. Right. So, we usually have the same weather. So that's what the weather meteorologist on our ABC affiliate mentioned. That we will have a tornado 3 in the morning because the rain's supposed to start this evening, and then early in the morning we will be filled with a tornado. And just a week ago we were still thawing out.
Yeah, and the sad thing is there are some people still without water.
Like your native city. What's going on in Dallas?
Well, Dallas, I think, is fine. I think Fort Worth still has some areas that don't have water, and Garland has maybe 30,000 people without water. And I think this is about the 9th, 10th, or 11th day without running water.
Yeah.
But over here where I am, we're doing pretty good. Yeah, my area, to my knowledge, nobody lost water over this way. We had a lot of power outages, but the water stayed on. Thank goodness.
Yes. We didn't have any power outages. We had low pressure water, but not like some areas of Jackson that you all have seen on the national news. And we're trying for help now. So anybody that can help the state, the governor had to call in the National Guard on Tuesday after the mayor had contacted him on Monday to bring in tankers. He had already been helping with the state had already been helping with bottled water. But many people, it's going on like 2 weeks, and I know a couple of our council people, for instance, Dino's sister Angel, she is our new council person, for our ward. And in her area by Callaway, no water, and she's a council person. And then Aaron Banks, whom you often see on the news, and South Jackson, he's a council person without any water going on 2 weeks. And he's out there volunteering and helping people get flushable water and bottled water. And but everybody in Jackson needs bottled water. So anybody out in the in the world who would like to help Jackson, Mississippi, Jackson is definitely in need for assistance when it comes to water.
Okay,
anybody
I picked up some.
Anybody with tankers they would like to donate to come to Jackson and help, we definitely need the help. And other cities, we're the capital, so just imagine what smaller cities need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I picked up on some of what you were saying. I'm still having a little problem with the audio. But I saw Councilman Banks on a video. I visited some of the – in fact, I went to all three TV stations' websites today. And I saw him. And I saw where some people on Facebook were saying they were still without water. But – It just seems so ironic because that landmark building is flooding, so water everywhere. Somebody showed their street. This guy said that was the reason he sold his house and moved to Madison or Ridgeland was because the streets flooded. Mm-hmm. And it's sad that water is being wasted, you know, not being able to come through your faucets and everything, but it's flooding out into the streets, or there's a building downtown just mass flooding.
Yes. The infrastructure here, as in some other cities that are the same size, definitely need an overhaul. But we've known this. We've known this since before Johnson administration. So it's not a new problem but now this is towns across the country and the federal government see that we need to help growing cities like Jackson and other rural and growing cities when it comes to infrastructure and the water situation.
What government official is responsible for getting federal assistance to get the infrastructure taken care of? Is that on the governor, the mayor?
That's a good point. And I think we're figuring out why the cities and towns have not been assisted. Because what department handles that?
Yeah, Jackson has had a water problem for years. And like I said, the infrastructure, the rusting and corroding pipes, that's been there for 35 to 40 years. So it's kind of like the ERCOT thing when we lost. Like ERCOT.
I'm listening. Your voice is better than mine.
Oh, I was just saying, the water thing in Jackson reminds me of the ERCOT problem here in Texas. They've known for years that the infrastructure for the power grid was not up to snuff. But as long as they could get away with it, nobody seemed to care. It's like, oh, that will never happen. But you want to be prepared just in case. So, I hate to be this way, but it seems like,
that you could get a windstorm of this caliber in 40-plus states. No one knew.
Well, they should have known. They watch out for everything else. You know, if they think a little person is getting 2 cents more than they're supposed to, they investigate that.
Why?
You know, in public funds, like, well, you're getting $12 worth of food stamps and you only deserve $2. They can monitor things like that, but when it's overall big city problems, that seems to go unnoticed. And I don't want to be pointing fingers, but these people that get paid the big bucks are responsible for situations like this. But they don't seem to be ready to take any responsibility. They want to pass the buck. Well, I didn't know what they should have done.
Right, and you're right. And they study other things, you know, things that that do not affect us at all. So natural disasters, very important to research and study.
Yeah, we shouldn't wait until after something happens. I think that they need to be constantly monitoring what could happen, and in the event this happens, we've already taken care of that problem. You know, we've anticipated it, and if and when it happens, God forbid, we will be prepared. We won't have to say, oh, we should have done this. But it seems to me like they were more concerned about how much money somebody was going to make.
True. And people have been dying in Texas here. Yesterday, I know you've seen the story where we lost a young mother here and her baby. And I don't know, they might could have been saved, but the water pressure was so low. The neighbors, not of course, the fire department could get to them in time.
Yeah, that's just terrible.
And they said the water pressure was so low where even when the neighbors tried to get water before the fire department arrived, they couldn't. And so a 23-year-old mother and I think that maybe three of her kids and one child is fighting for his life in Georgia at the burn center.
That is just terrible. All of this is preventable stuff. And this is the United States of America, not a third world country.
That's what I, you know, the men of the report mentioned that on national international news regarding that, America is looking like a third world country now. You know, the southern states that aren't used to the winter storms dealing with this. And,
they've had the winter storms in the south. This is not the first winter storm in the south. When I first moved to Dallas, it seems like they had an ice storm every February. And I remember that because
you know
I was
what?
Working at the telephone company.
And
how I had to get out and get
this big line. I'm like, I remember when in the early 80s, there was a winter after winter after winter.
Yes.
Of ice and
for
snow.
At least 5 years in a row. I mean, severe ice storms, you know, streets shut down because they don't. Have any kind of, in my opinion, really good way to keep the streets clear. And at that time, they were just putting sand out. And then a few years later, they came up with this sand and salt mixture, which to me is just nothing but a clunk of mud because it'll de-thaw, you know, unfrost or whatever, defrost.
Yeah, what is this salt and salt stuff that they've been talking about doing?
It's just something to mess up the streets and cars. Yeah, because it'll unthaw and refreeze, and then you have this cobblestone ice, you know, big chunks and hunks of stuff. It's terrible, but this has been going on for years and years and years, and then we had a little stretch of very mild winters. But, yeah, freezing cold, icy storms, snowstorms and stuff, this is nothing new to the Dallas Metroplex.
Right.
The thing was, they didn't want to invest in snow plows, and they didn't want to stock up on salt because it happens so infrequently. Well, in my opinion, is if it doesn't ever happen at all, you still need to have some way of clearing streets. Be prepared in case you know there's. If it's just one chance out of 100, you still want to have some kind of backup.
A metropolitan area like Dallas-Fort Worth and even a growing city like Jackson should be prepared for anything can happen. Last year we had the flood, and now this year we're experiencing this little storm in the aftermath.
Mm-hmm.
We have a caller also from Georgia. Who's the one calling in from Georgia, Cousin Linda? And again, you all did not hear me, but today is the last day of Black History Month. Black history is every day, every minute. And I dedicate this podcast to my Cousin Linda. Cousin Linda, as a preteen, marched with the late great Mezra Evers. And she's shared her story, some of her stories before here on the podcast. And you will hear more of her stories also. And she might share one today. But just want to dedicate the show and remind everyone that it's the last day, but Black History continues. The Golden Globe tonight, that was the big talk also on Good Morning America. And they say the Golden Globe getting a lot of backlash because Black is diverse because of labor.
You know, those award shows always have that issue, a lack of diversity, and I think the only way that that's going to improve is if we do what's going on now, like Regina King has, I think, a production company or something, where she's producing programs, Shonda Rhimes, and who else? Well, maybe Oprah. You know, and Tyler Perry. When we have our own production companies and we can hire more diverse people, then maybe we'll have a better chance of being included.
True.
Because those organizations were not created with us in mind.
What and what they mentioned this morning, and I figured there were at least one or two or three members, but they mentioned that there aren't any people of color that are members. So, like, you know, you would like to think maybe one or two or three.
They go way back to old Hollywood before things were better, when things were different from the way they are now. You know, we do have some representation. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that there weren't any members of color on the board or who can vote or whatever.
Neither did I. I just figured the Golden Globe is like the – I thought it was the more – like, you know, it is the beginning of award season. So I always figured it was the most open-minded of all the award shows. And then Good Morning America broke the story this morning. About, wait a second, it's snubbing people of color and STEMs and projects like it's nobody's business.
I didn't know that.
And it airs tonight.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I don't really do a lot of award shows because I've always felt, and this is my personal opinion, a lot of times I've felt that the best was really not chosen. It was politicking and who promoted the movies or TV shows or whatever. Because you've seen actors and actresses whom you know out-acted, just did an outstanding job. And those particular actors or actresses didn't even get nominated. And then along comes a weird movie. And I may get in trouble for saying this, but I was looking at some of my old posts on Facebook, and it was dealing with the Oscars and the movie Birdman, I think, won Best Oscar. And that was the craziest movie to me. I'm like, how did Birdman win? And it just seems like, okay, we like this movie, we like this actor, and, you know, so what if the competition was better? We like so-and-so, and that's who we're going to give the award to.
Right.
Hello?
Oh, you
Hello,
have a call?
Caller from Georgia. Hi.
Yeah, what's up?
Talk Entertainment Report. I'm SKKB2, and I'm in Dallas, Texas. How are you? What's your name?
This is Naj. Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I just started listening a little bit ago. But yeah, like when you're talking about those awards and anything like that, ultimately putting more of us on the board is really not going to fix anything. Maybe you get one or two that get in that wouldn't have gotten in. I think the more appropriate thing is to just have your own awards and your own prestige. We should look at the shows that promote us and that are used for us as more important. We should be covering those events. And I know we don't have many now, but that would be the next step. Even if it's the NAACP Image Awards or whatever their version of it is for movies or whatever, those would be the things that we should put our interest in. And then that way, what needs to be done actually happens, because then we'd be celebrating our own and using our own to judge and having our own criteria. But expecting them to act right, like, I mean, we know this game.
And exactly.
They're not going to.
I've said that for years, too. You know, stop begging and just get your own. And we do have our own shows, the Soul Train Awards, NAACP Awards, and stellar awards and all that, but it seems like we still want that recognition from the others. They don't seem to feel like they have really, you know, actors and actresses feel like they have not arrived until they get the Oscar or the Tony or whatever. And I'm like, well, that doesn't really define you. If you know you're really good and you are, be happy, okay? Even if you didn't win what you consider the ultimate, you are good enough to have won, but we know what the politics that goes into it.
Right, right. And that kind of tells it all, the fact that we put more into those as opposed to our own. But if we did, and again, this ain't, you know, this ain't no knock against the actors and everything else, because they know that stuff determines what roles they get, how much money they make, and how much future money they can make. So I get why, you know what I'm saying? I ain't trying to down them. They're just in a bad situation. But that would be the turn that would change it. But the other thing y'all was talking about, though, because, you know, y'all in Dallas, I'm in Atlanta, so it's a story for Atlanta that's similar to what y'all went through.
And Linda Oliver is from Dallas, Texas. And you're in Atlanta?
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, so years ago we had a mayor named Kasim Reed, and there was predictions about us having an ice. Huh? Oh, well, they had
worldwide listeners are listening.
Yeah, so we had predictions about an ice storm down in Atlanta. So the mayor, Kasim Reed, spent a bunch of money on some ice trucks, you know, salt trucks, all kinds of, you know, different preparations to deal with it. But the storm didn't happen. So immediately the Republican legislature accused him of wasting money and talked about how Democrats do this and spend money too much and, you know, ruining the budget, everything else. So the next year, the storm actually did happen. They didn't have the trucks and everything. People ended up having to abandon their cars in the middle of the street. It was this whole thing, like Snowpalooza down here in Atlanta. Everything was shut down. People had trouble getting their kids out of school. Yeah. So it was a huge problem. So that kind of correlates to what you're talking about in Texas, to where you were.
I said that happened in Georgia, but I think that was the year the Super Bowl was in Dallas, because it was bad weather throughout the South, and I seem like I remember that. Once you mentioned,
about 10 years ago, they had the Super Bowl over in Arlington, and it was terrible. A lot of the celebrities who had come into town didn't have any way to get around because the streets and highways were just not prepared for it.
Right. So it just goes down to this. Republican ideology says don't spend the money. Like the sister was saying a minute ago, prevention would stop an emergency. So no matter what, you spend the money on the prevention just in case it happens, and then you always have it. But if you go with the Republican ideal that you should never spend money on things and you shouldn't regulate companies, and that allows the companies not to weatherize and not to have things up to standard because they believe in anti-regulation. And this is what happens. So people like kind of got to be realistic about what you're voting for when you put certain people in office. And that's what it is. When you say free markets and no regulation, this is what happens during a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to say what the people need. And I'm an open-minded, independent-thinking Republican, and my cousin Linda, I mentioned, she marched with Major Evers in the civil rights Democrat. But I agree with spending money for what the people need. I agree with COVID plan right now. I don't understand why, but you just mentioned not spending money, but I don't understand why more Republicans are not agreeing with this COVID plan that Biden-Harris has. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, but it's kind of baked into the cake of the ideology, though, because if you take Republican ideology for what it is, I mean, that's a part of the program. Part of the program is you have to be business first. You have to say regulation is bad. You have to say the markets will determine what should happen. And that's just not good for actual people. It's something that works in the classroom in theory, but in practice, in real life, you know, it's a disaster.
Yeah, and unfortunately, so what, Beth?
I had mentioned that you have a response.
Yes, because it seems that Republicans have a way of getting people who don't have a lot to be in agreement with them. And that's what I can't understand. You know, you have these really, really, really poor people who will say, well, I don't want any government help. And then you turn around and say, well, are you getting food stamps? Are you on Medicaid? And they'll say, yes. Well, that's government assistance. So what do you mean you don't want government assistance? So many people are uninformed.
Yeah, but that's where you get to the dark part about it, to where most of them wouldn't admit this, but what they mean by no government assistance is they don't want some people to get government assistance. Because in their mind, the person who gets government assistance is the lazy person who they can't stand, who they think is the biggest problem in society. So in their mind, you know, you can always appeal to that and say, hey, those lazy good-for-nothings are going to be taking up all your tax money. And you can get away with anything as long as you preach that to them.
Remember the welfare queen?
As a Republican, an open-minded, independent thinking, bipartisan thinking Republican, I was attracted to the party because of small government, but not wasting money. But you provide money to the people and what the people need. You don't pull back and let people suffer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hard part, man. Because to be honest, the idea of small government doesn't actually exist in a meaningful way. Like, no matter what, your government is going to be pretty big. You know?
About certain demographics. But we the people means we the people. It doesn't mean.
Right. And once you start dividing and splitting it up, then you're just talking about creating inequality. And just to, you know, kind of put a throw on all of that, when we really think about what's supposed to be done, if we were concerned about the budget, we would say, wait a minute, the Pentagon spent $1.7 trillion on this F-35 program for this plane, and the plane doesn't work, and now they're about to scrap it. Nobody's held to account. No, there's no hearings. Nobody is going to jail. Like, if we really were concerned about the budget, that's where the money is. That's where we would go. We would say, hey, we need to cut back on some of this defense spending. You know what I mean? You wouldn't do it with taking money out of single mother's pockets. You would do it by actually going where the money is spent, which would be the DOD.
Well, you know, those government
and the middle class. In the middle class, where have we gone? Where, you know, the middle class, my goodness. People
How they're fighting tooth and nail. They don't want a $15 an hour minimum wage. What they don't realize is that would be good for everybody. People would have more disposable income. They can shop more at small businesses. They could have better housing. They won't need as much government assistance. You know, these long waiting lines to get into Section 8 homes or whatever. They'd be able to go to the free market and get a regular home to rent or purchase if there are like two or three people living in the house that's working. But it just sounds too good to Republicans. Excuse me, Beth. But it just sounds to them like $15 an hour is just too much money. And $15 an hour, really, technically, with the way things have, the cost of living has gone up, $15 an hour is still not a whole lot. Not if you have rent or mortgage, you have car payments, car insurance, utility bills, food. So that's still not a lot of money, and I don't understand
that
when you look at
$15 an hour gone already with the stuff you just listed. That money gone already.
Exactly.
But like you just said, if minimum wage is 15, that would change the private market, because then that puts pressure on every other industry to raise the wages there. So if you saw $15 as minimum wage, that means the person who's so-called middle management or almost middle class, that person would also get a wage increase because now they have to compete to keep that amount of labor. And I always tell people this when they talk about food stamps, because they always forget. Food stamps means that certain people get a set amount of money that they're going to spend on certain amounts of the month. You know how many grocery stores depend on that? You know how many shipping companies, as far as truckers and all of these people, depend on that money being there, and that being meaning that they're going to get work. When the girl goes, cashier goes into that grocery store, she's getting 40 hours a week, partly because they're being subsidized by this money that comes in on the 1st and 15th, which helps them be employed. The person who stocks the shelves, the ones who clean the place, the fact that the company now has to, you know, have the lights on. And water and everything, like all of that contributes to the local economy, and the source of it is, you know, this government subsidy that's actually helpful, not hurtful. But people don't see it that way because they want to assume those folks are lazy.
Oh, yeah. Like I was mentioning, the welfare queen back in the 80s when the news used to like to highlight that, they always show a black woman. And I'm so glad, because people wouldn't listen to me when I was saying, well, it's more of them on welfare than it is black people. Because way back, I'll never forget it, in 1973, I had a little piddling job, and it was just me and two other white women. And this white woman, now I always thought welfare was for women with children only. And this young white woman was saying that her husband was on welfare. He had one kidney, and that qualified for him to receive welfare. This was in Mississippi. And I said, your husband gets welfare? And she said, yeah, he just has one kidney. That's when I found out that white people, period, got welfare. And then white men get welfare. But you never heard that. And so I started telling other people, and then I started trying to do a little research the best I could, and I found out, yeah, white people get welfare. They just don't publicize it because they want to make it look like it's the black woman that's having all these children out of wedlock and there's no support from the father. I said, well, that's the way they designed the system, because if you had a man or a boyfriend or whatever, you know, living with you, they would cut you off welfare. I said, well, that doesn't make sense. And then if you have another baby, they increase your welfare benefit by a few more dollars. This is a warped system to me. I don't get this. And then Oprah had a show one time where she had said that there were way more white people on welfare than black people, because a lot of times black people are denied.
Exactly.
And
we're only 13% of the population to begin with, so we can never be the majority of that. You know what I mean?
Right.
We're only 13% of the population, so we can never be the majority of them. That's always been a scapegoat and a way for them to take it away or demonize it. But in reality, like you said, the majority are people who are white who are getting it. And not that they don't deserve it, because sometimes the job market is what it is, or disability or whatever. And I don't knock those people for getting it. But this whole idea that black people were the problem, like it's insane, man. Like, it ain't enough of us for us to be the problem.
Right.
That's my problem.
I hate the fact that they try to make it look like only black people receive it.
Right.
Right.
And the CDC did a study a couple years ago. Let me add this one thing. The CDC did a study a couple years ago about parental involvement in children's lives. And what they found was even when the people didn't live together, black families were the most active in their children's lives, whether it was co-parenting where they lived with the mother but had to go stay with the father sometimes, and auntie picked them up from daycare, and the grandmother kept them on weekends because certain person were scheduled, this, that, and the third. The black family life was the most centered on the child, had the most active participation in the child's lives. And somehow we got looked at as the group who don't give it. But we kind of know this, though. We kind of know this intuitively, though, because we've all had nieces and nephews and brothers and sisters, and we've seen how the whole network kind of works around those children to get them what they need. You know what I mean? So it's crazy the way that they do it to try to, you know.
Yeah, Beth, you know, you and I grew up with that. There was no.
Why do you believe in the village? It takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah,
right.
Beth, you know, we didn't ask anybody, can you keep so-and-so and so? You just dropped them off because that was the way we were brought up. Okay, we're going to spend the night with Aunt Liz or Aunt Helen or whatever. Well, when the kids get out of school, they're going to go to grandmother's house or Aunt so-and-so's house. It was just a given. You looked out for other children, even neighbor's children. But we got away from that.
I gave talks to you because when I was a toddler, age 2, 3, 4, 5, you were literally a single working woman would come pick me up on weekends and teach me every weekend and take me out to different types of restaurants and teach me how to act like a lady in proper etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. People, you're right. People, out of the black
country, we've always done this. We've always done this. The network ain't as big as they used to be, to where we had the whole family participate. The network is a little smaller, but it's still the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But let these folks tell it. They said, no, those people are single mothers and the father's not involved in the life. And you like, man, I know a few raggedy dudes who aren't in their children's lives, but that's a few. The rest of them I know, they either still together or they live in separate housing, but they both are co-parenting and everybody's putting in the work. Like that's the majority of black folks that I know. I don't know these stories of these Negroes who disappeared from their children's lives and you never hear from them again. And then on top of that, you know how many stepfathers and stepmothers we got out here? Who have put together, the dude got one kid and she got two, and now they together, and it ain't no difference between how the kids are treated because it's all like the amount of families like that I know, like that's way more than these no gooders that they talk about because that's few and far between, man. And those people pay a heavy penalty, boy, because you are not welcome at the function. You are not respected at the family reunion. You are not a person in the family with any standing if we know you got kids and you ain't taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trip. Some of these mind games you play.
So,
it is a trip. And look, I ain't no Democrat, so I ain't coming on here trying to hype them up. So. I listed my grievances with the Republicans, but I got a lot of issues with them Dems too, just like y'all do.
On no label where Democrats and Republicans come together and try to stop the waste of money. So you're right, it's on both sides and in the middle too.
That will never happen because you have too many politicians who are getting rich and staying rich on the system the way it is. That's why it doesn't change because you start talking about people's personal pocketbooks and they're not going to vote against their interest, no matter how many people they're not helping or how many people they're hurting. They're looking out for their interest. I can't tell you how many people I voted for based on their promises and they didn't live up to them.
Right.
So,
I bet you they lived up to the promises to the donors. Now, the donors fund their reelection campaigns and everything else, their promises get fulfilled. They don't have to worry about
it. I posted an article dealing with that exact subject on Facebook the other day.
Since I was going to throw my hat in and run for office in 2 to 4 years, but what do you all think happens? Because I noticed these politicians, they started as grassroots community activists and they're going to do the right thing when they're in office. So what happens when politicians...
Somebody dangles some money in front of them. They start living the high life and liking it.
The good ones rise above that, but that's going to be far and few between. And normally the system is already so corrupt that it corrupts you as you move along through the system. Hey, you want to be on this committee? Okay, that committee is financed by X, Y, and Z. And X, Y, and Z want to see such and such brought forward in a bill. So you want to sign on to that bill so they can keep funding you? Okay, I'll do that. Now you got to go dial for dollars for your reelection campaign. You need to call these campaign donors and talk to them, and they'll donate to your campaign. And they're going to ask for stuff. They're going to want certain promises. You can feel those
and
promises.
And we're talking
you can
huge
keep getting
donation. Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
Yeah,
so,
a good
I mean, that's
politician
what that's what dirty is.
One.
One term.
Try to figure out, okay, what happened where? You know how you try to dissect a relationship? Like, okay,
mm-hmm.
what? Let's backtrack. What happened? Where? When did you go from being a, like, I'm for the people to, you know, to not being for the people or not being for all the people?
Well, I think it's like stealing. You know what I mean? I think it's like stealing. Let's say you steal something small, you get away with it. You steal something again, you get away with it. Before you know it, your morals about stealing are probably a little different, and you can justify what you're doing by saying, well, it's okay, it's not hurting anybody. And before you know it, you just become, you know, a thief. So I think that same kind of thing applies in politics. Well, think about y'all guy down in Jackson. He seems like a good brother. I think he's doing good work down there. I don't know if they're going to allow him to stay too long. What's the brother's name?
Choke Lumumba.
Yeah, I don't know how long he's going to be around.
The way things are going, it seems like there's a lot of discontent with him. And what's happening may not be his fault. I don't know. I'm not in Jackson anymore. But I see a lot of comments on Facebook where a lot of people are not happy with the current mayor.
I've seen that councilman coming after him. I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have a local, and there are some local personalities. Like, my podcast is, you know, Blog Talk International, but you all picked up the Trifle voice here in Jackson. Check this show out.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives a voice one. He investigates the mayor, city council, the supervisors, Hines County. He investigates people on all levels. He even discusses personal business.
Who does that, Ben?
Why? Napoleon Edwards, the Cipher voice. The Cipher, C-I-H-E-R voice. So follow him because he, no holds barred.
I can't
anybody.
Hear you, Beth. Follow who?
Oh, my goodness.
What's the person's name?
That's why I want you two to talk more than I am because I'm having a sound issue. The Cipher voice. The C-I-P-H-E-R voice. He is nothing nice when it comes to exposing everybody.
The Cipher voice?
Especially our government, our elected officials.
Okay, you can text it to me because I didn't pick it up.
Yes, the Cipher voice. But you two talk more than I am because we this is an international audience and people want to know what we're talking about.
Okay. Well, I was saying that good politicians don't last because one of the
lines of the college in Georgia. I have your number. I can text it to you if you want me to.
Please. Yeah, Beth, I was telling you about you all had a really good governor, Bill Allain. He really, really, was a good governor. But for some reason, the people, you know, the money people didn't like him because he was there for the small person, the little people. He really was a fighter for the average citizen. Who?
And that'll get you in trouble because then they'll fund your opponent. They'll put money into finding, digging up dirt on you, find as many, you know, opposition research things as they can to put that info out there. And try to chip away at you and get rid of you. So, yeah, that's the tough part. If you actually do it for the people. You got a fight on your hands.
Even before he got elected, that campaign went down as the muddiest in the history of politics, because they had homosexuals to come out and claim this man had been having relationships with them. I mean, it was on the national news just about every evening, the gubernatorial race in Mississippi. And Bill Allaine still got elected, but it was horrible. It took a toll on him, his family. And then they finally did an expose, and these homosexuals came out and said how they lied, how they were approached by his opponents and paid money to lie and say that they had been in relationships with him.
Wow.
Now, that was before he got elected, and after
that
one term, I guess he said, I've had it.
See, that's the tough part.
Y'all had a good Attorney General, Jim Hood. But
Jim Hood did run. He ran against.
But he lost.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And we know
how
Governor
Tate Reeves is. I was on the Waller campaign, and then, you know, I did campaign for Tate. But I came very close to campaigning for Jim Hood, because he was a really good attorney general. He was really good. Mike Moore. He was his assistant for many years, who my cousin used to work for. And so,
That stuff is a trip. And that story y'all telling about Mississippi, you can tell that story about almost every state in America. It's that same process where if you're an outsider and you're trying to do things for the people and you're not going to bend to the typical power in that state, then they're going to come after you, and you got a fight on your hands, so it's going to be hard for you to stay in there. So I think Mississippi is an example, but I think that's every state when you see stuff like that.
Well, it's pretty much anywhere, and it comes down to sometimes murder. Atlanta person, I'm sorry, I don't know your name. What's your name?
Nas.
Okay, are you familiar with the Phoenix City, Alabama story? Okay, Phoenix City, Alabama is next door to Fort Benning, Georgia, down there in Columbus.
Okay.
Well, Phoenix City back in the 50s was full of corruption, prostitution, gambling, you name it, and they were doing it. And one of the persons who was, I think, running for, I don't know, some political office, but anyway, he was going to try to clean up the city because it had just become a cesspool. You know, they say it was worse than Las Vegas. And anyway, the person who was going clean up the city got killed. And they said that's the only reason that city changed, because people finally saw all this corruption and they decided to do something about it, because they said it was worse than the mafia. Because they were getting all this money from the soldiers over at Fort Benning. Fort Benning and Phoenix City are like right next door to each other. And these guys from the military would come over, and spend their money on the prostitutes and the gambling and all that other kind of stuff. But, it's Phoenix City, Alabama. Just sometime check it out on Google. And they made a movie about it, too. And I used to live in Columbus, Georgia. My ex-husband was stationed at Fort Benning. And we had met a lot of people who were from Alabama, and they were telling me about the Phoenix City story. And I didn't think too much about it, and then I happened to see the movie on Turner Classic Movies. That movie scared me to death, because when you, and I was real young at the time, you start thinking about how people can be corrupted. And then when somebody tries to change the status quo and make things better, then they get killed. And, you know, like the civil rights leaders were assassinated. Well, this took place in their own community, the white community. They did the same thing. They would kill each other if you were trying to cross them.
Right, right. And that brings up that story from Wilmington, North Carolina, where you go back and find out that way back in the day, black folks decided they was going to get on their civil stuff. They got their voting blocks together. They elected their own people, and they were governing well and living well. And it was just basically a coup. The local whites there killed black leaders and ran the black folks out of Wilmington, North Carolina. Like, it's a big story, man, but it's crazy when you read about it. Now, you're talking about elected officials at gunpoint being forced to resign or killed or run out of town.
Yes.
Wow.
So, yeah, you might have a good heart going into politics, but, you know, you find out the dark side once you get elected.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the dark side is what keeps some good people out of politics. Like,
yes,
you know, the dirty politics and the campaign. Because I know when I do decide, which will be soon, to run for an office here or there in Texas or wherever I am, I know there will be a one or two scandals that will come out. You know, people will actually just lie on you.
They dig up stuff from 40 and 50 years ago.
It's crazy, the stories that they share with me, that it's nothing close to the truth about them. Like you were mentioning regarding Bill Elaine. I mean, people would just create craziness.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. Well, I got around, but it was good talking with y'all. I see y'all show was on, and I listened for a while, so it was interesting, and it was nice talking with y'all, too, man. So,
nice talking to
y'all,
you,
have
too.
A good Sunday. Yeah, appreciate it. Y'all have a good Sunday.
You.
Hopefully I catch
too.
Y'all on again. If y'all on the same time, I'll definitely try to catch y'all again.
Be on next Sunday also, so please call in. Let's see. I'm sure that, we can talk about the Golden Globes. And what are your thoughts regarding Tiger Woods? That crazy accident that he experienced this week.
Oh, well, I hope he get better. I guess he's lucky that it didn't end up worse, considering where it was that his car flipped, man. That was a really dangerous situation. So glad that he was able to come out of it alive. Hopefully, you know, rehabilitation and all that. You never know, man. We might see that dude play again on the senior tour or something like that. But, man, he got out of there with his life. So that's a beautiful thing, and hopefully he gets better.
Right.
Wow. So, wow, today's the last day of Black History, but woo! You all have definitely shared many facts and stories about Black History Month. So, worldwide listeners are definitely doing their homework regarding some of the facts that you all have shared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Okay. Well, I was watching PBS over the...
Thank you for calling us. And
all right. Y'all have a good night.
Sunday.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yo, speaking of Black history...
Probably about 10. Yes.
How many more minutes?
About 13 minutes.
Okay, I was watching PBS, which, shout out to them. They've had some very, very interesting shows on Black history this month. A lot of Black musicians that I didn't know anything about, and then Black musicians that I was familiar with, I didn't really know about their lives. They showed Josephine Baker, Count Basie, some guys that I can't remember their names that I have forgotten, but great, great musicians who contributed a lot to jazz and different types of music that we listen to in the Black community, and how they've had influences on other types of music. So this time next year, if people remember to watch their local PBS stations, it's a lot to be learned on a lot of entertainers. You know, a lot of times people just take entertainers as just an entertainer, but when you look back at the way that Josephine Baker was accepted in France and how she helped the French people during the Nazi regime, and in the medal that she was awarded by the French people for her participation in helping the underground during the World War II, and just how, say, Lena Horne, Harry Belafonte, how all of them maybe not have marched in the streets, a lot of them did, but how they donated money to the civil rights cause. I remember when they came to Jackson, Mississippi, a lot of them donated money to Tougaloo College. A lot of them gave free performances. Yeah. And a lot of our younger people just don't know who those entertainers were who paid the way for them today.
The backstory and the causes, because many of our favorite entertainers had causes that they might not, you know, bragged on and discussed. Only people like you know, because you were, you know, but they never blew their own horn regarding, oh, I'm helping this community, because that was, they had that cause. So, and that's amazing that PBS is hearing that story.
Yeah, and there were some white entertainers as well, because I remember when the actor Tony Franciosa came to the Masonic Temple with Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Lena Horne, and a whole bunch of them. And, you know, it really makes you feel good that even though these people are multimillionaires, international stars and whatever, they think enough of you and your cause to come down and actually volunteer their time and their services.
Right. Right, because you never know what is close to their heart. Because I know in 93, a cousin Cindy and I, we had gone to the planetarium, and then I mentioned to him, let's go to Tougaloo to one of the poor people's rallies that our current mayor's dad had held, and he would, you know, all often do rallies at Tougaloo College. And Tupac was there. And Tupac was going out on stage and put on a good show. After the show, Cousin Kenny and I met him. And I was working on a project, and also I did a vision regarding events to help young people. And Tupac told me, he said, anything for the young people. He said, I will come back and help you and help the young people, no charge at all. You know, and a couple months later, he was in the news. He was filming the movie with Janet Jackson, Poetic Justice, at that time. But then also he had gotten in trouble soon afterwards. You know, the trouble where Lumumba had to be his attorney. And so he never did get a chance to come back and help. But you're right, you never know what's important to a person. Tupac had a cause to help young people and people of all ages. But he was like, whatever. He said, I come back, no charge. I help with anything for the young people. Those are exactly it.
Yes,
because
so I
talk
to a lot of
celebrities. You don't.
Yeah, I talk to a lot of young people who sadly don't know our history.
Right. But that's what you mentioned, man. I noticed that, Cousin Linda. I've been loving your posts. You've been sharing a lot of black artists. And you shared some, and I thought I was a big Josephine Baker fan. You shared some back-to-back post videos all regarding Josephine Baker. I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Where did Cousin Linda find this? Right.
Well, look, I'll take credit, but a lot of it is YouTube, because I may go on YouTube and look for Charlie the Cook Andrews. I look at a lot of his recipes, but YouTube will say, you may be interested in this, or they'll just stick a lot of videos on there. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's like
right.
They read my mind. I want to see this.
Right.
So being black history. Yeah, being Black History Month, they posted a lot of those videos, and I said, I just got to share these. I may be familiar with stuff due to my age, and I was so active in the civil rights movement. I said, but there are, you know, because I have a lot of Facebook friends that I don't know.
Wow. So when they recommend those videos to you, they really do know us, don't they?
They do. Those algorithms. The algorithm. And I don't know. I used to say, oh, they're just reading my mind. It's something in my computer, you know, jokingly. But I realize a lot of times the algorithms aren't so bad because they know what I'm interested in, and they will put videos out there that they think I might be interested in. And I really am, a lot of them.
Right. And you know, I'm big on, you and I both are big on spiritual and religious and biblical stuff, but you know, I'm big on self-help too. And sometimes they send me like, this is recommended for you. I'm like, wait a second. What are y'all trying to tell me?
Right.
But like, you're right, because they know my, like, Prince music, or artists that are similar to Prince, or Janet Jackson, I will look up and hear, this is recommended for you. And I'm like, wait a second.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah, I used to tell one of my younger friends, I'm like, this, my computer is reading my mind. How do they know that I wanted to find this? You know, you can type in like one letter. You know, I go to YouTube a lot for songs that I want to post, and I can type in one letter of a song that I'm thinking about, and it'll automatically be the first selection. I said, this is scary. My computer is reading my mind. This artificial intelligence is too much for me.
Right. Yesterday, I was looking for a movie that James Franco made here in Mississippi as I lay dying. I was trying to think of, I was talking to a young lady who helped me run the James Franco project group. And I was trying to think of one of James' girlfriends. And I knew she was in As I Lay Dying movie. And I put in As I Lay Dying, but a rock group that I happen to like named As I Lay Dying, a video popped up, and I'm like, wait a second, I hadn't even thought about them recently, you know? And I'm like, wait a second, I just wanted to see the James Franco movie because I wanted to pull up, like, the premieres at music at film festivals and stuff. But it pulled up, like, other titles related, other projects related to that title. And I'm like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And a selection of music and then works that I never, by the same title, but you know how you see, like, forms and poetry and stuff like that. I'm like, wait a second, stuff that I said, well, I just need to go back and look at that. But you know something, Cousin Linda, I wanted to mention that you're an author, too. Your book that you authored, name again.
Myrna's Adventure?
Yes. But have you thought about writing a book about your memoir or a book about your experiences in life and the civil rights to travel, to, you know, living in different places? Or have you ever thought about writing a book of that sort?
No, writing a book for me is difficult. I used to write short stories, plays, poems, and everything when I was in elementary school. And back then, people didn't really encourage you, because I actually wrote a play and produced it and sold tickets. I think I was about the fourth or fifth grade or whatever. And my little neighborhood friends would always ask me to write a play or write a short story because they enjoyed reading them. And I said, I want to be an author when I grow up. But I just never got encouragement. And even when I was at Lanier, I enjoyed writing short stories and stuff. And I'd get good grades on them, but that was the end of it. And I never tried to pursue that any further than, you know, a class where you have creative writing or something like that. And Myrna's Adventure was, Michael Payne and I used to talk about different travels because, you know, he and I went to Paris together, I think about three times. And we just would laugh and talk about some of the crazy things that happened to us.
I want to do Dubai with you.
You want to hear what now?
With you next time. I said, I want to do Dubai with you next time.
Oh, honey, I would
we
love.
I thought we were going this year. I guess it will be next year.
Yeah, I would love for you to go to Dubai, Beth. That is one of the most fabulous places I have ever been. And I've been to a few, but Dubai for me was, I kind of think, the pinnacle. It just has so much to offer. It's like if you can dream it, they can do it. And I'm just never shocked at some of the things, because I still look at videos of Dubai, and it's like, how did somebody even think of designing that building, let alone get the building built? They're very creative.
I bet the air is just amazing there. My mom always would talk about how much I love Dallas air, but the air in Dubai, oh my God. I bet it really is amazing.
It is. The way, because I was trying to describe to some of my older coworkers at a job I had a few years ago, and I was talking about the architecture and the tall buildings, and these guys were saying, well, we have tall buildings in the United States. And I said, pretty much they're just tall buildings, just skyscrapers. And I'm sure you've seen on some of the videos I've posted. Huh?
But those buildings are so abstract. The buildings are so abstract.
They are.
The experience in person is just amazing.
It is. And, yeah, it was just fabulous. And I tried to talk my friend Laverne into going back. And she said she just doesn't want to go back. I said, well, didn't you enjoy it? Didn't you think it was fabulous? And she said, yeah, but Laverne had a bad experience on the plane flying over because she made her reservation at the last minute.
Because Mom and I, we love your pictures. And we were just excited.
Yeah, well, like I said, Laverne had such a bad experience on the plane going over there because she didn't make a reservation in time where she could choose her seat, and she flew coach. And she said she was on the very, very last row in kind of like a leftover seat, and it was so uncomfortable. I said, well, flew business class. I flew business class. I made my reservation real early, and I got the seat that I wanted. I got an aisle seat right close to the restroom, and it was a 16 hours and 25 minutes. That is a very long flight, nonstop.
That was my next question. How long did it take to arrive there?
16 and a half hours. That's like two 8-hour work shifts and 30 minutes overtime.
Wow.
It's a long flight. If you're going to fly coach, I highly recommend that you make a reservation early so you can get a good seat, so you're not sitting in that middle seat and then way back in the back of the plane, because the plane was huge. It was, I think, an A380.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you have problems, on long flights.
I said, what airline?
Emirates.
That's what I thought. Okay. Is that the only, that's the only one that I only see, but I didn't know of others. But, yes.
Qatar Airlines.
So, just in that long flight in a bad seat.
Yes, avoid that if you can. And I think Emirates. I'm sorry, what was your question?
I like the commercials. Were they really
the one
kind?
With Jennifer Aniston? Yeah, Emma
like
flies over.
I mean, they really have really good customer service, don't they?
I didn't hear your question.
Their service is really good, isn't it? I mean, you know, I like their commercials and whenever I see.
I love the service. I love the food. You know, even though I flew business class way back in the day, say like in the 70s, if you flew international flights on international carriers in coach, you got that kind of service, because I flew Varig, Brazilian Airlines, and Singapore Airlines in coach. But to me, it was almost the equivalent of first class. I mean, the service was just fabulous. I couldn't believe
you
I was actually flying
class,
coach.
I said to myself, it sounded like it was like the equivalent to first class.
I always preferred international carriers. The service was so much better. The food was better. And you just, at least me, I felt like I was in first class. And I flew quite a few international carriers. That was one thing that I liked to do. But I'm a little leery now about certain international carriers. I wouldn't want to fly, and I don't want to insult anybody. But it's certain international carriers that I wouldn't want to fly, you know, due to recent plane crashes and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if they're not doing good maintenance. I don't know if it's terrorism or what. But I'm kind of picky now about what carrier I would fly on.
Exactly. So I'm still trying to figure out what happened to that flight last week where one of the fans broke. And that was on domestic grounds, right?
Bethany, that happened
to
me.
And I
don't know, but now I had one of the same problems flying Delta Airlines to Hawaii. We were flying out of DFW, and I was flying alone, and there were four sisters on that flight. And three sisters were sitting in the three seats in front of me. And then I was sitting behind one of the sisters, and their other sister was sitting next to me. So she and I were just talking. They were from North Carolina. And we were talking, laughing, having fun, and one of our engines blew out. And we were on our way to Salt Lake because we had a layover in Salt Lake City. And one of those engines blew out, and we weren't anywhere near an airport. That lady and I didn't know each other from Adam other than just talking on the plane. And we held hands and we prayed. Her sisters in front of us were praying. I don't know what the other passengers were doing, but we were praying. And to show you how serious it was, when we landed in Salt Lake City, there were fire trucks out there waiting with the hoses to put foam on that engine that caught fire. Now, that really scared me, and that was Delta Airlines. The right engine.
Wow. What's the only scary experience out of all your
No, ma'am. I've had some horrific flights. No, and a lot of it is due to weather. You know, the pilot is trying to land in thunderstorm.
I think the last time you went to Paris, I think we were concerned because the weather was bad. But was the weather, I don't remember, it seemed like
I've been to Paris.
Really concerned.
Yeah, I was in Paris twice during some really, really bad weather, snowstorms. Well, not really snowstorms. I was there during like one winter. They had a whole lot of ice. And because that was, and this is why I don't like flights where you have to have layovers or stopovers.
We were like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, one young lady and I were flying to Paris, and we had a layover in Cincinnati, Ohio. and it was a whole lot of ice and snow on the ground there. And but you know, they were able to clear the runway, get the ice and stuff off the plane, and it was just cold in Paris. But I have been in Paris when there is actually ice there, when you know they have sleet and it freezes. But yeah, I've had some scary flights in my day. Thank goodness I'm a praying person, and I have people who pray for me. Because before I go on any trip, I always solicit prayer.
Yes. And we mentioned Josephine Baker. Whenever you travel to Paris, have you ever visited places that she performed at or frequented?
No. I think she performed at the Folies Bergère. Folies Bergère, however it's pronounced. I did go to the Folies. And a lot of people criticize the entertainment, you know, the can-can. And I said, well, you have to realize they're not going to be changing to show you a bunch of naked women like in strip clubs or whatever. That's not what the Folies is. But I thought the can-can was cute. I enjoyed it. It's like it hasn't changed in, what, 100 years or something? But that's what I expected. And it was what I enjoyed, but a lot of people are looking for something more modern. You know, they'll say, oh, this is for kids. This was for kids. Yeah, because kids are so exposed to everything now. But it was good entertainment to me.
I mean, you want things to remain authentic. Some things need to remain authentic.
Exactly.
And that was what some people need to understand, or we're going to lose our history. Yeah,
a lot of people
need to be erased, but like the can-can, and some things need to stay as authentic as they can.
Yeah, because I was telling one of my former coworkers and I were talking about some place I wanted to go, and I hadn't been in 15 or 20 years or whatever, and she was saying, oh, I bet everything's changed. And I said, no, it may have been Paris. And I said, no, I said, because those places have been there hundreds of years, and they're not going to change. It's not like in the States where, because, you know, when we first moved to Dallas, you'd see a building on your way to work in the morning, and you come back that afternoon, and the building's gone, and the next day there's a hole in the ground. And then they put up an entirely different building. They were constantly, constantly tearing down stuff and building something new and different. But no, a lot of foreign countries don't do that. They're very proud of their history. And, you know, you'll see stuff that's, well, this was built back in 1252. And that's what I enjoy about traveling. You get to see history. Because I remember in the 10th grade when we were talking about the Vatican. And that was when I decided, you know, I want to go there one day. I never thought I would, but I actually did. Because we were studying about the ceiling in the Sistine Chapel and Rome and the Colosseum and all this stuff. And I took a trip to Rome, and I actually saw what I had studied in history. I'm like, this has been here for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and it's still here. It might look a little different because it's old, but the fact that you actually see something that is that old.
Right. Wow.
But yeah, Beth, we're going to have to take a trip to Dubai so you can see and experience. You saw my pictures that I posted on Facebook, my camel ride and all that. Like I fell off the camel.
I like the story about the destination that you all dined in Dubai. Something talks like, what was it? The item that you ordered or thought about ordering was like $800?
Oh, my meal was $400. My lunch, and it would have been $800 because I ordered caviar, and he told me he said it comes in, I think the smallest amount you could order was a gram, And I said, well, I don't know how much a gram is. I probably can't eat that much because I don't know anything about the metric system. I said, I probably can't eat that much. And I said, Laverne, I said, will you help me eat, you know, my caviar? Will you eat half of it? And she said, no, because I don't like caviar. And thank God, because I was going to try to eat the gram. And look, and I thought a gram was a whole lot. And I asked the waiter. Yeah, I said, how much is a gram of caviar? And he said, $800 a gram, madam. I said, $800 a gram? And he said, it is Iranian caviar, the best caviar in the world. I said, well, hell, at $800 a gram, it ought to be the best in the world. So I said, no, I don't want that. And then I ordered.
I said, in the galaxy.
I didn't hear you. And then I ordered white truffles. And I ordered white truffles, and so the truffles I don't think they were outrageous, but I didn't know because you know they what do you call it? They shred the truffles over your food, and so I just told him to shred some, and he kept right on shredding. And so I finally said to myself, well, I think that might be too much. And so I didn't realize that the truffles were as expensive as they were. And when I got my bill, I said, Laverne, I said, you're not going to believe this. My bill is, I think it was about $425, and this was for lunch. I did not have a lot of food. I had one cocktail. I had Nathan Outlaw's lobster risotto, and lobster risotto was the meat of a lobster claw. It was not a whole lobster. It wasn't half a lobster. It was the meat of the claw.